You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the latest Football Digest podcast, available on all podcast platforms. Subscribe now through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts from, so you don't miss a single episode.
Hello and welcome to the Football Digest podcast. I'm your host, Conor Brumley, and I'm joined today by my good colleague, Ned Keating. And there's only one place to start today. We're going to talk about the Champions League to begin with. And last night, we saw two brilliant games, along with the two games we saw on Tuesday night as well. But last night, we saw PSG lose 3-2 at home against Barcelona, and Atletico Madrid win 2-1 against Borussia Dortmund, which could set up a pretty tasty semi-final between two Spanish clubs.
Yeah, it looks well-placed for a La Liga semi-final, guaranteeing at least one Spanish club in the final at Wembley on June 1st. I think definitely more so for Barcelona to get the win. I know away goals don't count anymore, but still to get a win away from home, to have that advantage, that one goal advantage to take home with you, a perfect night for Barcelona, I think, almost. You know, any sort of victory would have done it for them. But another cracking game, one that kind of really seesawed a rollercoaster match as well. Obviously, Barcelona taking the lead, then PSG hitting back to take the lead themselves 2-1, and then Barcelona scoring two of their own goals to come away from Paris with the win. It'll be disappointing for Luis Enrique, obviously coming up against his former club in Barcelona. Won the Champions League with Barcelona, of course, in 2015. Would have been hoping to do the same with PSG this year. Kylian Mbappe looking to sign off from PSG with a Champions League trophy in his collection. And again, you know, all hints are that he is going to join Real Madrid in the summer. So, of course, Barcelona will be their big rivals, his big rivals, potentially from next season. So he would have been looking to get one over on them early doors. Didn't. Still got a chance to perform well at the Nou Camp next week, of course. But it looks like advantage Barcelona, because they have that one goal advantage to take from back home. So they'll be, you know, fairly confident their chances of reaching the final four. For Atletico, a little bit different. Again, you know, you want to win at home in your first legs. If you are at home in that first leg, you want that victory to set you up, to give you an advantage to take away from home. And it will be difficult for Atletico next week. You know, of course, going away to Borussia Dortmund, the yellow wall, everything that kind of comes from the Signal Iduna Park and playing in that atmosphere. It'll be a tough place for Atletico, but they are, definitely their character can't be questioned. They are one of the hardest working, fighting in the sense that they will give everything, not fighting in the sense that some people might think about at Diego Simeone's side. Although, I don't know, we might see that at times. You know, I remember that game against Manchester City a few years back when they kicked seven bells out of City. And to be fair, City gave as good as they got, I think, in that game. But I think that one's probably, you know, Atletico will be happy to take an advantage with them. Borussia Dortmund haven't been vintage this year in the Bundesliga. They haven't been, you know, the kind of Dortmund side of old that we've been seeing. And they're kind of they seem a bit shorn of their star players. No Bellingham this year, no Haaland as well. Jadon Sancho has gone back there, but he is trying to find his way again after a difficult spell at Man United. He's doing okay there. I don't think, you know, he's doing well. He could be doing better, but, you know, again, he's just happy just to be playing football regularly, I think, and a manager who likes him in Edin Terzic. But work to do still, I think, for Atletico, despite the fact that they have that advantage because of everything that kind of comes with playing at the Signal Iduna Park. But I do think we are looking very likely, because the fact, you know, it sounds so simplistic to say that both Spanish sides won their first legs on Wednesday night, that we are looking at an all-Spanish semi-final on that side of the draw. But it does look like it's going to be a heavy chance that that is the case.
You look at the results on Tuesday night as well. You know, we saw two brilliant games, Arsenal drawn 2-2 against Bayern, Real Madrid drawn 3-3 against Man City, which sort of poses the question of the abolition of away goals. Is that having a massive impact now on these Champions League games? Because I remember sort of 5-10 years ago, these first legs were often cagey. The home team doesn't want to give an away goal away. They're desperate not to concede. It has almost the adverse effect that when the rule was brought in, you were hoping that away teams would attack more to get the away goal. In reality, home teams shut up shop a little bit more, and you ended up with two teams who both didn't want to concede a goal, whereas now we're seeing all four of these games have just been epic, you know, in terms of the fact of the goals that are being scored, the quality on the pitch, both teams going for it in all games. Do you think the change from away goals has had a massive impact on European football?
I think so, definitely more from, as you said there, from the view of the home team, and especially the home team in the first legs, because, you know, I'm not comparing top level football to Football Manager, the video game here, but I can remember, you know, kind of you know, playing games on that in the past, and when, you know, away goals were in the rules in the game as well, you're kind of thinking that first leg of a European tie where away goals did count, that you not necessarily, you know, try to shut up shop, but the key wasn't, it wasn't must win, it was, you know, must not concede. I think, you know, don't give them an advantage, have that advantage yourself when you go into that second leg. And that's maybe how the teams did approach it, as you said there, you know, especially the home teams, that, you know, winning wasn't vital, but not conceding was. You know, they could draw the game 0-0 and they'd still be fine then, because they've not given anything away to the opposition. One goal away from home, they'd have to score twice then. You know, it kind of gave that, you know, it gave way to that game plan, as you said. You know, now you're kind of seeing, you know, kind of gung-ho approach from teams at home, you know, maybe a bit more. They're not, you know, winning is vital now because they have that. That's the advantage that they have then, that they are at home first, that they have an opportunity in front of their own fans to use that advantage to their advantage and get an advantage in the tie. Lots of advantages there. And that kind of creates a more open game. They're more likely to kind of come forward, attack. You know, the away side is always going to, you know, maybe the away side now is a little bit more reluctant to attack because of it, because the away goals don't matter. And again, they want to kind of keep it tight so that they've got something to, not so much defend, but still have something to play for, at least when they have that second leg at home. Do you feel a little bit sorry for Manchester City that they've basically got nothing from scoring three goals away at the Bernabeu? Yeah, you kind of do feel a bit of sympathy for them there. But equally, you know, should they have been a bit more better defensively? I feel like the quality of the goals in that game were quite high class, weren't they? So I don't know if we can pin the blame too much on the defence there. But it does feel a little bit harsh on them that they kind of come away, you know, nothing really, frankly, isn't it? You know, it's 90 minutes, a 90-minute one-leg shootout that we've got now at the Etihad next week. You know, Arsenal, Bayern Munich, the kind of flip side of it is, of course, the penalty decisions that come from it. And Bayern Munich, you know, angry that they didn't get a penalty for Gabriel handling the ball in the box like a little schoolboy. Even the referee, you know, kind of referred to it as a schoolboy error, didn't he? In every sense of the word. But, you know, it doesn't, because away goals don't count now, and because it's level at 2-2, it doesn't feel like that should have, you know, we should be talking about that pass next week. You know, if Bayern go out, they fluff their lines at home, away goals didn't come into it, it wasn't because they missed out on that penalty or whatever. You know, they're at home now, they have the chance to kind of go on and win the tie in front of their own fans. And I think away goals means then that, you know, kind of that little silly error, we shouldn't be talking about it past, you know, probably even today really, and we should kind of move on with our lives and everything else. You kind of, yeah, you do feel a little bit sorry for the away teams when they do come out and attack, you know, and even Barcelona as well, you know, Wednesday night to score three goals. You know, they have the advantage of winning, but they don't necessarily have the advantage of you know, the away goals as well. So PSG could win 2-1 in the new Camp next week. Is 2-1 a better result than 3-2 at Paris? You know, grand scheme of things, you know, maybe not in terms of like the pure score, but a 2-1 win for PSG next week takes them 3-2 extra time and potentially penalties as well. So it feels a bit, you know, a little bit harsh in places, but it does, you know, kind of at least make the home side put the onus on them to come out and attack a little bit more, as well as perhaps before when they were at home in the first leg, maybe they were a little bit more defensive minded, shut up shop, not give away a goal, not give away an advantage to that side.
And just to sort of finish off this Champions League chat, what are your predictions for the quarterfinals? I mean, I'm guessing from the conversation we had at first that you think Barcelona and Atletico Madrid have a pretty strong chance of making it through, but you know, Arsenal, Bayern and Real Madrid, Man City, they're all both evenly poised. For me, if I'm looking at this, you'd probably say advantage Bayern and advantage Man City, but is that how you see it?
Yeah, because they've both got the legs at home, isn't it? And I think the home advantage could be key. And I think Manchester City, we saw last year, you know, in the semi-final against Real Madrid, it wasn't 3-3, it was 1-1 at the Bernabeu, wasn't it? But then Manchester City stepped it up a gear and kind of tore Real Madrid apart in that second leg at the Etihad. This is a different Real Madrid side, of course. I think that one was in transition. John Cross on Monday's show was still saying that they are a side still in transition, but I think they're definitely a little bit further along the path now, and you know, littered with great players, playing a little bit differently as well. So I think it will be a tougher test this time around for Manchester City. However, I do still see him progressing. From the other tie, it's hard to say. Bayern turned up on, you know, Arsenal didn't turn up, I think. David Raya had another suspect game in the Champions League between the sticks. I think defensively, Arsenal were a little bit more ropey than we have seen in the Premier League. You know, the point there is that surely they can't play as bad as that again next week. You know, Bayern seem to turn up, seem to rock up for this game. You know, the Bayern Munich that we've seen in the Bundesliga this season, and especially since the turn of the year, has been, you know, a sorry shadow of their former selves almost, you know. And, you know, at the weekend as well, to be 2-0 up and then throw it away against Heidenheim like they did, that's not Bayern Munich. So you kind of, you know, thought going into that tie, okay, well, this should be not a walkover, but Arsenal should, you know, progress from it at least. The way that Bayern played in that first leg shows that they are in the game, shows that in European competitions at least, that they are still willing to fight, still willing to give everything. And when you've got the quality of players that they had, and this is a point I made with John on Monday show, when you've got the quality of players that they have throughout the squad, you know, there's talk about Thomas Tuchel having lost the dressing room, and you know, of course there are going to be fractions within it because fractures within the squad because of how the season is going. It's how it happens at top level football. If you're not winning and you're not, you know, changing for trophies and they're slipping through your fingers, you know, there are going to be cracks in the squad, do open up a little bit more in those circumstances, but they still have enough quality individually to go out and win that game and pull together, and personal pride and everything else that comes with it. So Arsenal have that to come up against, because actually on paper, that first 11 for Bayern is still probably top four in Europe, even if they're not doing it on the pitch at the minute. And that's what Arsenal have to be careful of, I think, in that second leg. I think the Bayern Munich squad on paper is better than the Arsenal squad on paper. Football isn't played on paper, we know that, but Bayern showed their quality in that first leg and they're going to be determined to show their quality in the second leg. Tough flip of a coin, I think, at this point. But for the sake of a narrative, I'll go with Arsenal. We'll have an all English semi-final on one side, all Spanish semi-final on the other. And we'll know it'll be Premier League versus La Liga in the final at Wembley come June 1st.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I would take that. Yeah, I think it would be an interest, and certainly having two English teams playing each other in the semi-final with the title race around it as well. But we'll switch chat now. Ruben Amorim, you know, that's been the name that's been trending all week. Liverpool have reportedly reached a verbal agreement for him to replace Jurgen Klopp. This is a name that me and you have sort of seen, and we've even done videos about him potentially going to Liverpool. Do you think they've landed on the right man? Or, to be maybe a little bit devil's advocate, we saw Xabi Alonso in the last couple of weeks say that he's staying at Bayer Leverkusen. Was this maybe the second choice for Liverpool?
Well, the key thing here is that, you know, Xabi Alonso plays football in a very different style of way. I mean, the funny thing is, we're talking about two guys who inherently play with wing-backs here. You know, both Xabi Alonso and Ruben Amorim are exponents of wing-backs. You know, we can talk about whether or not it's a 3-4-3 or 5-3-2 or whatever, you know, in transition, etc., etc. But they both play with wing-backs. But the way that they approach it is very different. You know, Xabi Alonso is more kind of passing, more vertical, you know, kind of more, shall we say, how Manchester City play football, you know, in terms of, you know, possession is key. I think, you know, we can say that. And, you know, vertical progression with Xabi Alonso is kind of how they get through it. And, you know, not necessarily pass teams to death, but they kind of, you know, vertically progress the ball, wait for that opportunity to come, and they play it around and they kind of pull you out of position. Ruben Amorim and the way that Sporting Lisbon are playing are more akin to how Jurgen Klopp is, you know, kind of rock and roll football, really counter-attacking, really, you know, they are still a good attacking side, but, you know, likewise with Liverpool as well, we always knew what their strength was, gegenpressing and all of that, and you know, the, you know, rock and roll football was what, you know, Liverpool were known as in the early years of Jurgen Klopp. So I think in terms of ideologies, I think Ruben Amorim is a better fit for Liverpool to continue with the squad and the players and the style of football that we've seen under Jurgen Klopp. I think Ruben Amorim is definitely the better option on that. So, you know, Liverpool, I think, you know, the thing is that the story was always going to be with Alonso, former Liverpool player, a Liverpool legend, still widely and, you know, loved in the city, well regarded in the city, and doing a fantastic job in his first senior management role. You know, that was always going to be the story. Oh, you know, will the Liverpool legend come back and will he, you know, lead the team on and carry on this glory fight? Will he have been the right fit? We'll never know. At least in this current era, this current squad, we'll never know if he was the right fit. You know, who knows what happens in football. He might take the job at Liverpool down the line in a few years, but Ruben Amorim is young enough. He could be at Liverpool for the next 30 years. You know, what is he, 39, isn't he? Fergie kept going until he was 73. You know, feasibly, Ruben Amorim could be there for 34 years if he wanted to. But again, we know football's a little bit different these days and those kind of dynasties don't occur as much as they once did. What was it? Going off on a complete tangent here, but Guy Roux, I was there, I think, had about 46-year stint or something ridiculous in charge. Various different roles. There were 6-month spells where he went up to director of football and back, but we won't get that again. But Ruben Amorim's young enough, he might do that at Liverpool, he might not. But in terms of currently with the squad, the players available, how they used to play and all that thrown in, I think Liverpool have actually landed on the right man, as the question suggests, and that Ruben Amorim will... you know, kind of a continuation. It'll be different. It'll be a different way to how Jurgen Klopp approaches it in some circumstances, but it will be a continuation, at least for this Liverpool side of you know, how they've kind of been playing for the last, what is it now, nearly 9 years.
If you look at, you know, managers who've succeeded big name managers, so, you know, the ones that immediately come to mind are David Moyes replacing Fergie, didn't go so well. You've got Unai Emery replacing Arsene Wenger, didn't go so well. Amorim comes in here replacing a legend. Is the difference, though, between Moyes and Emery the fact that Liverpool are so well set right now? You know, Klopp has said that he wanted to make sure he was leaving a strong team, a team that was ready to go. And one of the reasons he's leaving is the fact that he's managed to do that quicker than he thought. Do you think that makes it different and we won't see the David Moyes style collapse that we saw at Manchester United, where he came in and just nothing went right and he was gone after sort of 8 months? Or do you think he will face the sort of pressure and he will struggle, you know, if they say go 5 games into the season, they've only won 1 game, will the pressure build so much on him that it's going to be almost impossible to replace Jurgen Klopp?
But don't get me wrong, he has to get it right, not necessarily from the off, but he, you know, he has to start well for the fans to kind of get behind him, and I'm sure they'll get behind him early on, but he, you know, the results have to come early doors with it. You know, even with Erik ten Hag, you know, I think, you know, it wasn't replacing Fergie, but he started a bit sticky at Man United. Yes, they won a trophy, but I still think, you know, we're still talking about that sticky start, you know, when they lost to Brighton and they lost 4-0 at Brentford. We're still talking about that with him, and we're almost 2 years down the line, and it kind of still feels that that's something that he wasn't able to shake off, and he wasn't replacing you know, a dynastical manager. He was replacing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who won nothing with Man United and got him in the Champions League a couple of times. That's all Solskjaer I had on his well, of course, there was a Rafinha period in between, but you know what I mean. You know, the difference here is, as you said there, Klopp is believing that he's leaving Liverpool in a good place. What's not really talked about when Ferguson left Man United was that squad needed a complete radical overhaul. You know, Ferguson was a master of it throughout his 26 years at Man United of, you know, rebuilding, constantly rebuilding, constantly rebuilding. But I think towards the end and that final season, he didn't really rebuild, didn't bring in, you know, as many new faces as he would do. The old guard wasn't replaced as much as possible. So it just left it all in David Moyes' interest. So in that respect, I think poor old Moyes, you know, trying to replace a legend who'd won the lot and won the lot consistently over a 26-year spell, he was always up against it because he had to be the one to overhaul the team. It wasn't necessarily just, here's my ideas, here's my tactics, here's a couple of players to kind of add in to what we're working with. It was, no, I need to replace him, I need to replace him. And they'd lost leaders as well, you know. I think that's another crucial bit of the puzzle there. And for Emery as well, you know, he was coming into Arsenal when, again, they needed a big kind of rebuild. You know, you saw how long it took for Mikel Arteta to even undergo that rebuild at Arsenal, to refresh it, to get a new identity at the club, to get these youngsters through as well. You know, Arteta struggled even after replacing Emery for the first couple of years, and now he's got that, now he's done the rebuild, he's done the hard work, he got given that time and he was allowed to do it. And again, you know, that's where I think maybe these two instances differ from what Liverpool is at the minute. As you said there, Jurgen Klopp is confident that he's leaving it in the right place, and I don't think anyone can argue with it. You know, they still have, you know, Mohamed Salah, who is advancing in his years. They will have to replace him at some point, and Virgil van Dijk. But you look at the rest of that squad, and especially that midfield was something that we've spoken about for years. Liverpool needs to refresh, they need to replace, they need to regenerate. And they went big and they splashed out in the summer, you know, Szoboszlai, McAllister. I know Endo's advancing in years a bit, but you know, Stefan Bajcetic, who's been out on the sidelines all season, could be that youngster to kind of come through in there. You know, Ryan Gravenberch as well to add depth to it. Curtis Jones has a breakout season as well. So that midfield is no longer an issue for Liverpool. Likewise, the attack, you know, Sadio Mane's gone, Roberto Firmino's gone, but then they've got Darwin Nunez, they've got Diogo Jota, they've got Cody Gakpo, they've got Luis Diaz. Harvey Elliott can play in there as well. You know, that attack seems fine for years to come. And likewise, the defence, you go through it and you kind of go, okay, they've got a few years left. So I think in this case, it is going to be tough for Emery. He is going to be compared to Jurgen Klopp a lot, but he doesn't have to oversee the rebuild that perhaps Moyes did at Man United and Emery had to at Arsenal as well. And I think that's in his favour this time.
Are you surprised at the timing of this sort of news coming out? Because we're only in the start of April and Liverpool have still got a lot to play for, to say the least. You know, they're still fighting on two fronts. Are you surprised that this information slipped out now when there's so much happening on the field for Liverpool? You know, to me, it feels like a potential distraction. Now Jurgen Klopp will be asked about this, no doubt, over the next, you know, couple of weeks. Are you surprised that Liverpool allowed this information to seep through the cracks?
Who says it was Liverpool and who says it wasn't Emery's team? But no, not really. I think there's a big managerial merry-go-round to come in the summer. Ruben Emery being heavily linked with the Barcelona job as well. You know, who's to say what agents are saying and agents aren't? And, you know, we know agents like to talk and slip things in here and there. Who knows where the news came from on that account? But no, I'm not surprised because, you know, there's lots of talk. You know, Xabi Alonso committing to buy Leverkusen. There was talk that Amorim was the favourite and Barcelona were ahead of Liverpool in running to get him. It's not a surprise that it comes out. Everyone talks in football these days, but I think Liverpool needed that kind of, not so much positivity, but draws a line under it now. You know, you're saying that Jurgen Klopp gets asked about it. You'd rather that than kind of, you know, the players know who's coming in to replace him. They know he's leaving, so they know who's coming in to replace him now. It's not, oh, okay, well, I wonder if this player would fit or that player would fit. So from the player's point of view, actually, you know, regardless whether or not it's public knowledge, it's good for the players to know who could be the successor, you know, so they start to get an understanding, an idea of who it is as well. And you know, to be perfectly frank, you know, you're saying that it serves as a distraction for Jurgen Klopp. I don't think what says what goes on in the press conference, he just sees that as an aside. You know, kind of what happens on the pitch is his bread and butter, and likewise for the players as well. I think they're so professional and professional enough that this just gets parked to one side. You know, when it comes to training, when it comes to the match, you know, they're not thinking about, oh, I wonder if Ruben Amorim is watching us today or not. You know, their full focus is on that game, on that 90 minutes. And in that respect, I don't think, and I don't see it being much of a distraction for this Liverpool side between now and the end of the campaign.
Okay, and final point on this, do you think that he'll get time to succeed? And ultimately, the big question is will he be a success as Liverpool manager?
Again, you know, the important thing here is that, you know, I referenced Mikel Arteta before, and he had to be given time for him to be, you know, a success with Arsenal. I know he won the FA Cup in his first few months at Arsenal, but, you know, he's had difficult spells since then. But Arsenal believe in his project, in his ideas, in how he was rebuilding the squad, and they're now reaping the rewards. Champions League quarterfinalists, could be Champions League semi-finalists by this time next week, well in the hunt in the Premier League title race as well. So, you know, it could be a great end to the season for Arsenal. And, you know, even at Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp was, you know, what was his first piece of silverware for Liverpool? Wasn't it the 2019 Champions League final, I think, wasn't it? It got to the final in 2018. I'm trying to run my mind back through it. You know, Manchester City had a fair run at the League Cups. I don't think it was that. So I think it was the Champions League final in 2019. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But, you know, that's a big fish to land as your first trophy with a club. But that's what I mean. You know, came in October 2014, wasn't until June 2019 that Liverpool won their first trophy under him. So even with Klopp, even with the success that he's enjoyed, won a lot with Liverpool, he's needed time to win trophies. Admittedly, at a period where, you know, we've not seen dominance like we have from Manchester City, but, you know, it still took Klopp time as well. And, you know, he'll be regarded as a great Liverpool manager, but it still took him the best part of 4 years to get that first trophy. And that's, you know, that's where Liverpool needs to give Ruben Amorim time. You know, he's a new manager, he's coming into a new setup, new players, you know, it will take time. You know, Liverpool could win the title next year, but, you know, that would be a great achievement for Ruben Amorim if they are even title contenders, because he has to get his ideas over, has to win the players over. You know, the kind of point starts again now, and I think he can be a success at Liverpool. I think, you know, how they play, how they approach it is, you know, and how he will approach it is more similar to this kind of current Liverpool setup. So I think that stands him in good stead. But, you know, he's coming up against, you know, two teams who are well down the road on their journeys in Manchester City and Arsenal. If he wants to challenge for the title again next year, he'll be coming up against two teams that are very further advanced, whereas they're just starting out on their journey. But I think in the end, Liverpool will stick with him, will give him time, and I think he will be a success.
Speaking of the title race this season is certainly looking like an exciting one. You know, it's not often we have three teams going gung-ho for it. This weekend, I'll just run through the fixtures. Man City are at home to Luton. Liverpool are at home to Crystal Palace. And Arsenal are at home to Aston Villa. If you move your eyes to the Premier League table, you'll see that Arsenal currently are doing the best in terms of goal difference. Top of the league at the moment with a 51 goal difference. Liverpool 42, Man City 40. So that's kind of like an extra point for Arsenal right now, which brings me to my next point. Is this a good weekend for Man City and Liverpool to potentially rack up some much-needed goals? I mean, you look at Man City in particular, they are on plus 40 at the minute, so they're 11 behind Arsenal. They're playing Luton at home. I've seen Man City put goals past teams like Luton at home in the past. I think this is a weekend where they can build on their goal difference, or am I just being very disrespectful to Rob Edwards at Luton Town?
No, again, on paper, this is like my catchphrase this morning. On paper, no, you're correct there. The expectation would be, and history has dictated that Manchester City do, in, you know, certain games like this, have the ability to be able to rack up big wins. But if they start chasing goals, and especially if this Luton side, because I think in terms of, you know, counter-attacking and the way that they can break as well, and the players that they've got to break with, Man City start thinking, you know, the first priority for Manchester City is to win the game. And if they start thinking about the goal difference before they've won the game, then there's every opportunity that Luton can break them down. Because again, you know, I'm saying that they've racked up, you know, big wins before, but there's been times that they've slipped up in games that they shouldn't have. And it has nearly cost them in title races in the past. worry about goal difference when it comes, you know. The fact is that I think if you win every single one of your games between now and the end of the season, doesn't matter if you're Liverpool, you're Arsenal, you're Manchester City, you win every single one of those games between now and the end of the campaign, you are holding that trophy in your hands come the end of May. You know, I think there will be times where teams all slip up in this title race. There is. You know, will it come down to goal difference? It might do. But let's, you know, win the game first. If you're three up at halftime, then maybe you can start thinking about going for goal difference. But just make sure you've got those 3 points on the board, because as I say there, you win those, every single one of your last remaining games, there is every chance that you have that trophy in your hands come May. And, you know, you're right that it does give Arsenal an advantage. It does give them, you know, I wouldn't say an extra point, maybe a half point is what we'll call it instead. And it does put pressure on the other teams, especially on this weekend. You know, Arsenal coming up against Aston Villa, you won't expect that Arsenal are going to extend their goal difference too much in that game. That being said, Spurs won 4-0 at my beloved Spurs won 4-0 at Villa Park the other week. I know this is at the Emirates, but again, it shows that, you know, there are opportunities that do arise against Aston Villa. So, you know, these, you know, porous teams defensively, when these chances come along, especially when you're playing them at home as well, you want to make avail of them. But the most important thing is that is secondary at this point, boosting your goal difference. Get those 3 points on the board, get that job done first, and then start to worry about goal difference afterwards. Otherwise, it could come back and bite you.
Apologies for a wee dog barking in the background there, if you can hear it. Talking of pressure. You know, for me, I look at Liverpool over these last few weeks, and I feel like they're the ones whose performances maybe have dipped a wee bit. Obviously, dropped points at the weekend against Manchester United. Do you worry a little bit about them in this running?
No. You know, I think a derby game, you know, is different. You know, Arsenal still have to play Tottenham as well, and they have to play Tottenham away from home, and you would expect, you know, Spurs could be indifferent, but you still know that will be a tough game for Arsenal. I know they won there last year, but, you know, flash your mind back 2 years ago and that capitulation, which eventually cost Arsenal in the race for the Champions League that season. You know, it's proven to be a difficult hunting ground for Arsenal in recent campaigns as White Hart Lane. I'll still call it White Hart Lane, even though it's, you know, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium there. It's still White Hart Lane to me. You know, and they've got to go away to Man United as well. And, you know, Jurgen Klopp saying that if Man United play like that, Arsenal will beat them, you know, bit disparaging there. But again, you know, who's to say that Man United don't turn up? You know, last season as well, Man United at home to Arsenal, nearly 2 years ago now, though, wasn't it? September 2022. And, you know, I think that was Antony as well, scored a great guy in that game. And, you know, Man United did well. I'm remembering that right. I've not got it wrong, haven't I? Man United did win that game. Yeah, it seems so long ago now and seems so far in the past. But again, that's proven a bit of a difficult place for Arsenal to go in recent campaigns. Yeah. There are going to be tough games, you know. And, you know, Man United having a bad season, we shouldn't, you know, say that, oh, you know, it's terrible, you know, and they didn't get a win there. You know, Arsenal still have the pressure on them to go and get a win against Man United in you know, the coming days. And saw quotes from James Maddison this morning as well. You know, Tottenham still have all three teams to play in this title race. Tottenham will have a big, big say in this title race, even though we're not in it. So it's those kind of games, you know. Do I worry about Liverpool? The pressure is on to get the result this weekend. They're expected to get a result against Crystal Palace, and they can ill afford to drop points in these kind of games when you're up against teams that are still fighting for their lives at the bottom. The expectation is you win this game, and you have to win it. And, you know, I fully expect Manchester City to get 3 points against Luton, and I probably expect Arsenal to get the job done against Aston Villa. That will be a tougher game of the three this weekend, Arsenal against Aston Villa, but I still expect them to get the job done, which means for Liverpool to keep pace, yes, they have to get those points against Crystal Palace, and the pressure is on because the margin for error, because there's, you know, for all three of these teams is quite small. You can drop points in one game, you maybe drop points in two. Can you drop points in three games between, you know, when the Premier League returned a couple of weeks back and the end of the season in May? That's when you start to get into dodgy territory, I think, in terms of if you want to win the title. So Liverpool have to get back on the winning trail this weekend. The pressure is on there, but I don't worry about them in the long run. However, if they were not to win this weekend, then maybe I will start to worry about them.
What impact do you think it will have, the way the fixtures have fallen this weekend? Man City played first, standard Saturday 3 p.m, which they probably weren't expecting at this stage of the season. Liverpool play on Sunday 2 p.m. Arsenal play Sunday 4:30. So Arsenal could be sat on Sunday at 4:30, knowing that, you know, the teams, Liverpool and Man City, have won. Maybe one of them has dropped points. Do you think it makes a difference that Arsenal are playing last of the three? Do you think psychologically that can affect things for them? Or do you think they can blank that noise out and just play the game the way they were going to play the game?
I think the fact that they went into the weekend top of the table will be a boost for them in that regard, because, you know, it isn't like, say if you're third, and like the gap isn't that big, but say if it was kind of reversed and Arsenal were playing first on Saturday and Man City were playing last, so that by the time Man City kick off, that gap is then up to 4 points potentially if Arsenal were to win. And then you kind of go, oh, 4 points, and it stretches and it stretches, you know, that kind of way. Whereas for Arsenal, they kick off on Sunday, you know, they could be 2 points back, and obviously that will be, you know, a gap for them. But they'll know what they need to do, and they know if they win, then they go top again, and the advantage is back with them. They'll know exactly what they need to do, which will be to win, frankly. I don't see either Liverpool or Manchester City. I don't see both of them dropping points, is what I mean to say. One of them might do, I don't know. You know, we never know what's going to happen in football, but I can't see a world in which, you know, both Liverpool and Manchester City drop points this weekend. So Arsenal know, we'll go into Sunday knowing that, you know, a victory is what they need to get back on top. And I think that will be the better way, because they're not necessarily playing catch up, because they have gone into the weekend first. You know, the gap is 2 points, but they know if they win, they'll go back on top as well. It kind of gives them that kind of carrot on the stick a bit. Whereas, you know, if it was roles reversed and the gap had grown, and then you're like, okay, it's 4 points. If I win, I can cut it down to 1 point. Then it kind of becomes a little bit different, because you're kind of always working, because then you still get that win and you're like, oh, I've still got more work to do and I've still got more work to do. Whereas for Arsenal, they win, and they know they win on Sunday, that they're still top of the table, and it doesn't change much for them. I think, you know, the goal remains the same. Win Sunday, we know we're still top. And I think that's where it can kind of help them in this instance, because they're not the ones chasing. They're the ones trying to put the gap between them and the rest.
And last one really on these games of the weekend. How much of a difference does European football make? I mean, in terms of a schedule, Liverpool play Thursday night, so they've got two less days rest compared to Arsenal and Man City. Also, Arsenal and Man City have, you would argue, more challenging games on the midweek after this. They've got to play their Champions League clashes. And could the mindset be for them, two teams, that actually we need to rest players at the weekend because we've got such huge games that are so evenly poised? Do you think that the European games can have an adverse effect for particularly Man City and Arsenal in terms of who they've got coming up next, but then for Liverpool, the fact that they're playing on Thursday evening?
I think for this week, at least for Liverpool, no, because they're at Anfield on Thursday and they're at Anfield on Sunday. So in terms of travelling, it's minimal, and it's, you know, almost like going from a Champions League game on a Wednesday to playing on a Saturday, which they've done before. I know Jurgen Klopp hates it when he played on 12:30s on a Saturday before, but it's not even that, it's 2 o'clock on a Sunday. So in terms of the gap and the swing, minimal travel, I think they can cope with that squad. And also, I think they can get the job done with, you know, Atalanta are a good side, but maybe some of the key men for Liverpool aren't needed as much tonight as they would be otherwise. For Manchester City, I can anticipate some Pep rotation against Luton at the weekend, possibly, with one eye on that Real Madrid return leg to come on Wednesday. And again, I still think Manchester City will have enough in that squad if there was a bit of Pep rotation to get past Luton. The difficult one is for Arsenal, because they still have to play probably their, you know, close to their strongest 11, if not their strongest 11, to get the job done against Aston Villa. But then they've still got that kind of, well, we've still got a job to do in Bayern Munich on Wednesday, and it's that tough one at this stage of the season that you'd hate. Arsenal would have loved to have won 3-0 against Bayern Munich at home in midweek, know that they could kind of, you know, focus then, prioritise their team selection for Sunday's game against Aston Villa, and rotate a little bit for that second leg against Bayern, knowing that the job was, you know, 40% done. I wouldn't say any more than that. But that they've come out of it with a draw, there is still a lot of work to do for that Arsenal side. What game do you prioritise? Well, they're both equally important this week. So you are going to make a big ask of your squad to, you know, at this stage in the season as well, legs are already tired. It's been a long campaign. And Arsenal probably need their strongest 11 in both games this week, and that's where it starts to become tough. We might not see the impact this weekend, but we might see the impact in following weekends once games start to catch up with sides. Man City have an opportunity to rotate, I think, against Luton this weekend ahead of that game against Real Madrid. Liverpool might rotate in the Europa League against Atalanta on Thursday night. Or if not, you know, if they get the job done at Anfield in the first leg, then they might get the chance to rotate next week. Arsenal, I can't see where the opportunity comes in to rotate again at this minute. You know, tough game against Aston Villa, tough game against Burnley, it's coming a week. And so it might not be this weekend that we see the impact, it might be in following weekends that we do.
And just before we go, Ned, I'm going to ask you just to give no explanation to this, but who do you think at the end of this weekend they'll be top of the Premier League? Just give us the name, we'll go with that.
Arsenal.
Interesting. I would agree. I think Arsenal as well. Thanks everybody though for joining us today. Thanks Ned for joining me and talking all things football. And yeah, please remember to subscribe, like, comment, whatever you want on our podcast. We'd appreciate that. And we'll see you again next week.